Okay, so I'm Stephen Gray, and this is part three of my conversation with Steve and Sean, Iboga ceremony leaders. And we've been talking about how the ceremonies unfold and their understanding of how they work with the holy wood. And Sean was more or less in the middle of speaking about some things that happen with the ceremony.
Yeah. So just to mention, I mean, we were sort of talking about middle day, but also just to mention that on the first night, when I'm working within the wood, for me, it's like having lots of different pots on the gas. And the wood's very clear with each person on where they are in their journey, whether they need to be, whether I need to turn the gas up higher and be giving them bigger doses, or whether I need to be turning the gas down and giving them smaller doses and enabling them to have a longer cook before they come up to heat.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you I think you alluded to, well, you did early in the conversation when you were introducing yourself about the wood or the spirit of the wood is actually working through you.
That's right.
Even yeah. In the consultation stage, but yeah. I assume that this is also going on during the ceremony, where the wood is actually kind of giving you information about the person, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because ayahuasca ceremony leaders talk about that too, where they're getting a sense of how to work with this, and that, also the Native American.
That's right, yeah.
Native American church roadmen or ceremony leaders say that the spirit comes in and says, well, you need to do this to help this person and this to help this person.
Yeah, that's right. And we're kind of holding that space free of direction as well. So we're in the practice of presence, and we're in that space where we're not giving any energy to any thought whatsoever. And then everything that needs to come through comes through in the moment, comes through in the presence. So the sense is that we're holding the space, and with us holding a space, holding that place of stillness, we're leaving the space open for spirit to step through and take care of whatever needs to be taken care of. And in the moment, it's very clear whether people need to be having more, whether they need to be having less.
You experience it that way as well, Steve?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's good that you mentioned the, you know, the connection to the spirit beforehand as well. You know, because it seems like it's really quite common for people to strongly experience the presence of the Iboga plant spirit before they've done the ceremony. It's very common. It happened for me. It was about a week before the ceremony, and I'm not somebody who has a lot of visions or anything, and I'm not a particularly visual person, but I suddenly found myself surrounded by pygmies one afternoon. I just glanced, and there were pygmies all around me. And
You were not under the influence of any substance, and this was daytime, and your eyes were open.
It was after an ayahuasca ceremony.
Ah.
So you know, so I think
the channels
I was
were
more
open
to
yeah.
to you know to the other kind of dimensions of activity than perhaps I would normally be. But it's quite common for people to as Sean had the story of, you know, the black man walking in when they're when they're chatting on the phone, and you know, these things are happening all the time.
So once you make your commitment to do it, it's like the spirit comes in and says, I'm going to work with you, I'm going to help you along.
Yeah,
here
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if it is that for some reason this work isn't appropriate for this person, then something will happen in the weeks leading up to the session, which will make it really blatantly clear for them that this is not appropriate for them. Or there'll be such a level of process that will come up to the surface that they'll see that they're just not ready for it now. And then they'll get in touch with us, and we'll have another consultation, and then we'll, you know, sort of keep them on the mailing list, and then at a later stage when they feel that it's appropriate for them, then they get in touch with us again, and then we'll do another consultation.
So we didn't actually get on the recording the part you were talking about a little earlier about how it moves in the through the day of that day.
Yeah.
So could you talk about that a little bit more, please?
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
So we spoke a little bit about the dead state in the morning. So we've had a density of being, there, which has moved through the day. And the thing with the second day is that even though we're not eating wood on the second day, it's unmistakably part of the journey. And we kind of, as we're doing the whole weekend as a practice, everybody's lying down, they have an opportunity to go outside and get a little bit of air, but for the most part they're just lying down and they're moving through this territory. And the territory is, they're moving from the density, from a deep death state, and moving through into their life state. And as they're moving in through their life state, they're experiencing what it is to be grounded. You know, because the gift of the wood is that it's grounding us into the space between thought. And the space between thought is more of an experience than a concept. And as we move through into the afternoon, this starts to become, it starts to be shared, this experience. And it's a really amazing time to be sitting in stillness in the afternoon. And some people will still be quite deep in the dead state and not quite sure what's going on, and maybe some people will already start to feel that stillness in the afternoon. But usually by the time we move into the evening of the second day, there's a shift that takes place. Everybody kind of feels it. Suddenly it's like, ah, there's a turn. And now we're moving into the rebirth. And where on the first night we were eating the wood and the wood was channeling us into our death state, now we're eating the wood and that same wood is now channeling, it's being channeled into us dancing.
And us before dance. That there's a meal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And does that help ground people, I would
it
imagine?
Does.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
It's kind of has a symbolic purpose.
Yes.
That it kind of marks, you know, okay, this is now, we're now moving into the rebirth. And this is like a little bit of food, a little bit of energy for the journey back down the mountain. So
do people have much of an appetite by then?
Not usually,
no,
but sometimes they do.
Yeah.
It varies from person to person.
Right.
Sometimes people are still feeling, you know, can still be feeling very nauseous at that point. And so they don't want it. But we get everybody to eat just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Just so that they're all woven in together for the next step.
Yeah.
Because it really is like bringing people back down from the mountain.
Yeah.
And everybody has to come with us.
Yes.
There's no possibility, you know, of not coming back. You have to come back with us. And, you know, and that's why we use the dance.
Yeah.
You know, we get everybody after the meal, there's a little bit of time elapses. And then, okay, everybody's up. Everybody's up on their feet. Mm-hmm. And we dance. And I drum and we dance. And that carries on for 2 or 3 hours minimum.
You mentioned this mouth bow kind of instrument. You have some recorded music.
Yeah, sometimes we. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Often we're using Magonga music.
That come from equatorial West African area?
It's stuff that's been recorded.
We have some really excellent music.
Oh.
Yeah.
We have one CD that kind of starts off a little bit slower. And the thing in Bwiti is that life is a journey. And so we start to journey off in small steps, and Bwiti loves to dance.
Mm-hmm.
So we start off in small steps, and then by the time we move through onto the second CD, we've got this guy who's like the Jimi Hendrix of the Bwiti world. And,
on the Magonga?
Yeah. Things really speed up.
So do it behind his head.
Wild.
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know. But all the time, you know, I'm working with a frame drum, so
right.
I can dance with this drum, and I'm
right.
moving around with everybody, and Sean likewise is moving around with everybody,
yeah.
and we're looking and kind of we only stop the dancing when we feel very comfortable that everybody's kind of where they need to be, and once we're in that place, people are absolutely ready to then just lie down and just be in a very, very peaceful, still space through the night. Some people will sleep, some people won't sleep.
Oh, really?
That second night.
So they may have had 2 nights in a row of not sleeping.
It's possible, yeah. And then the next morning, we ask everybody to take a shower, put fresh clothes on, because they've been lying there in those same clothes for 2 days, and have some breakfast. And then we come back together as a circle, and then we dance a bit more. We sit in meditation for a little while. We just sit in stillness for a little while, and then we dance again. And that's important, that last dancing session, because that's when we get to look around the circle of people as they're dancing, and just check where everybody is physically, you know, in their bodies, you know, what's going on for them. And so then, you know, we feel comfortable about it, and then we have a talking circle, and people have the opportunity to speak about their experience. But I have to say that usually not very much is said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually people have had such a deep, profound
mm-hmm.
experience that occasionally there are people who want to kind of reel off lots of details, but usually
mm-hmm.
it's just quite brief and to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And before we do the talking circle, we say that we encourage people not to talk about their experiences for, ideally, for the 30 days after the ceremony. And the reason for this is because how easy is it to fix a story? And as soon as you've told that story a few times, you're not sitting in the experience and telling that story. You're just telling the story, reeling it off from the last time. And it's like, it's almost like you've closed the book, you know. Whereas if you don't talk about it to other people, if you just stay open, stay with the experience, then bearing in mind that you've passed through so many different states of consciousness during this journey, you are allowing the time for those memories to come back to the surface. And so bits of the jigsaw puzzle will be coming up into consciousness, into your everyday life, as you are, you know, working your way through those 30 days after the main ceremony. And so you talk to somebody 30 days later, and they're just going to give you such a different picture, really, such a much fuller picture, because, you know, we always say this, you know, the proof of the work is the everyday life afterwards. You know, it's you know, you don't ground everything there in the ceremony.
No.
You ground it by allowing the experience to stay present with you over the days and the weeks afterwards. So, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't really actually have much choice
between
for the period afterwards, because for those 30 days, you kind of have to be conscious,
mm-hmm.
because what happens with this experience is you come out the other side and your DNA has been restructured according to your intent. And you come out and you have these 30 days, and this is where the work really starts. Because now you've been grounded. And with the grounding, you've been grounded into the earth, and it's as if somebody's pulled the thought switch.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just dropped into this place of stillness.
So what, apart from not talking about it for 30 days, what other kind of advice do you send people away with for how to manage that period of time?
Well, basically I tell them what comes in on that period of time. And I say that you're stepping into an awakened state of being.
Mm-hmm.
You've been grounded. And now what's happening is you've done a death, access to the land of your ancestors, and rebirth. And this ceremony grounds itself into your life. So the first part that you experience that gets grounded into your life is the death. And what happens with the death is all those aspects that came up to the surface before your session, all those aspects where you were ungrounded, all those aspects where you get immediately sucked into the experience, all those aspects that you judge, they start to come up again afterwards. And they come up in different voices, different expressions over that month. But it's that same experience that has come up before. But now what's happening is you're grounded. So this experience comes in and you're able to see it. And there's a recognition. Oh, of course. Yeah, this is this is the process that came up before. But now, because you're grounded, there isn't the same tendency to get drawn straight into it. Now there's a part of you that's able to witness it.
Yeah.
It's always, there's that part of you which is now witnessing.
It's essentially exactly the way I've been taught that basic mindfulness awareness meditation works, is that you begin to identify with the space around the events that arise up in your mind rather than just being those things and being lost in them.
That's right.
Or as
we
used to say, going solid on them. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. So, and it's quite interesting because there's a space now where you're not just being in the witness. You're not just witnessing the experience,
mm-hmm.
but you're allowing the experience to be as well.
Right. There's an openness. Things are softened up for things
yeah.
to come
yeah.
through more.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's like a big wide open channel has been
uh-huh.
created.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you're having the opportunity to come into acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're just acknowledging it. Okay. Allowing that experience to come up the surface. You're not trying to hit the remote control and trying to change the channel. You're allowing yourself to have this experience. And then through this experience of being able to see it and allow it to be as it is, then you start to see the roots from where it comes. And of course, the understanding comes from not wanting to understand. So now instead of having an intellectual insight on the weekend, maybe on the first night of a vision of what it was all about, now you're actually having the opportunity to experience it as your living truth. And this is kind of where it starts to get a little bit tricky, can get a little bit tricky for people.
Really?
Because what happens is it's a little bit like having a Zen master who's living inside your head. But now, instead of, you know, if your story comes up to the surface and maybe you're sitting there with your master and you get a little bit distracted by what's going on out the window in the dream and you forget that it is a dream, then the Zen master comes along and slaps you on the head with a stick. And in that moment, it's like, oh, of course.
Yes.
Well, the iboga is doing that as well, but it's not using a stick to hit you on the head with. It's using your reality.
Yeah.
So it brings the experience up to the surface, and if you identify with it and project it out, then it's going to come back. You know, you'll project it out, you get drawn into it, and maybe you get drawn into it for a little way, and then you realize, oh, you know, I've just been caught in my pattern again. And then you drop back into your experience, and then a little while later, not a week down the line, but really soon, it's going to come back. But this time it's going to be twice as big. And it's going to hit you in the face. And whoa! And if you project it out again, three times as big.
This is a common experience you've seen with people in that follow-up period after the ceremonies?
Yeah.
You also?
Not to describe
so much,
it quite in that way, but
yeah.
But I understand what you're saying.
Right, right,
yeah.
Very interesting.
For sure.
Yeah,
I mean, but it's like that, isn't it? Once you've experienced a different state,
mm-hmm.
then when the old state comes back to try and reinstate itself,
yep.
you know, then it is there's a clash there.
Yeah.
You know? Unless you're just really awake and aware, and you can just let it pass straight through.
Well, that's the life
yeah.
journey for
yeah.
all
exactly.
of us, really.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I guess what the wood's doing is kind of bringing us to that place.
Yes.
And then that's a place where we haven't been able to push through ourselves on our own.
Right.
Mm.
And now it's pushing us through.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's pushing us through and saying, no, you're not looking. Pay attention.
Yeah.
Look again. And after a while, if you are really in denial of it, after a while it starts to get ridiculous. And then you have to laugh.
Yeah.
And then when you laugh, you realize that you're laughing with this presence. This presence is laughing with you.
That's nice. Well said. Yeah, we had in the Buddhist world, we had a little thought about that where, you know, the life will sort of start by tickling you a little bit, you know, just gently. And if you don't respond, it, you know, starts to push a little harder. And eventually it just kicks
yes.
you in the ass.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
So this whole journey with the holy wood, in a sense, heightens and speeds up that whole process.
Absolutely.
But it gives
right.
you
absolutely.
a kind of an open groundedness to be able to handle it better than you might have otherwise.
That's right, because it's not so much an experience of letting go of your suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Not like pulling the plug and down your suffering goes down the drain. Instead, it's more an experience of letting go into your suffering.
Probably only have about 7 or 8 minutes left, so if you don't mind, unless you have something that you really feel we didn't cover about, you know, the specifics of the work, I just wanted to like broaden it out a little bit more for a couple of minutes and just ask. Well, for example, you know, we spoke about this idea that I told you that my friend and Native American elder had spoken of, the vision that's afoot of these three medicines, ayahuasca, peyote, and iboga, having an important role in the healing of the world, consciousness transformation. And just wondering if either or both of you could say a little bit about how you see iboga that way, for example, like, you know, how it's developing, and is it spreading much? Are more and more people becoming to know it? Is there enough medicine to handle much of an expansion of its footprint, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, you know, I don't think I've got much to say about that, to be honest. I mean, I could, but it's all just speculation.
Oh, okay,
and
sure.
All I can really say for sure is that we are being invited to more and more places to do this work, and as far as there being a limit to the medicine, well, I think, you know, there are limits to everything here on this planet. The, you know, all resources have some kind of limitation on them. But I really don't see
that's
that.
Something you think
I
about
really
about
don't
now.
See it's an issue these days.
Are there very many people...
Unless things change drastically, you know.
Are there very many people doing what you do that you're aware of?
Not that many, no. Whereas if you were looking at ayahuasca, then there are, you know... In fact, just in this geographical area, you know, I've been told that there are many, many groups working with ayahuasca. But no, there's not so many people working with iboga. But then you have to have had the opportunity to work with it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that hasn't been so easy. Even going to Africa, it's not straightforward. It's a very difficult place to, or it can be very difficult.
You don't just hop on a plane and go looking for it and find that you'll find it easily, you mean?
Well, you don't know what you're going to find. You know, and this is based on, you know, direct feedback from... I didn't go to Gabon. Sean went to Gabon, but lots, you know, quite a few other people I know went over there. And some people came back with... really with the plant spirit, and other people came back having in a way met the plant spirit, but actually just came back with more problems than they went away with in some cases. And there's lots of sorcery, black magic, you know, dark arrows flying about, just as there are in South America, you know, and anybody will tell you that a lot of the shaman out in the wilder areas they're really not holding their space at all. You know, there's so much ego present, and it's the same in Africa. So you have to be really careful when you go and work with strong medicines in these environments.
Yeah, but I would have to say that when we first started out, we used to have a lot more people who were into energizing their suffering. The people who work with us for the most part now are all into their awakened states. And where last year they were having to get the common reflection that was coming up to the surface was that people were getting used to the fact that we were now living in a polar shift and that all their future concepts had now gone out the window. And there was a degree of anxiety and fear about what was now going to happen. But the experience that we're having now that's coming up to the surface is more an experience of excitement, of an expectation of the potential of being an awakened being in this current time and place.
That's certainly the most successful attitude to have. Yeah.
Yeah, and for sure the plant, you know, the plant really, the plant is happy, you know, if you've been called in, you know, the plant is happy to work with you
mm-hmm.
wherever you are
mm-hmm.
on this planet, you know, it's not an issue. And there's no issue between the different plants either. You know, you can be in an ayahuasca ceremony and, oh, here's the iboga plant spirit stood next to me. Oh, okay. So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, we're seeing it as a very open, you know, anything is possible kind of world at this point in time.
Yeah. And the other energy that comes up quite a lot, we've noticed, is energy that comes up with Mexican, the Prince of Flowers. I think they call him Xochipilli. And he had a prophecy way back that at some point in the future, all the plants would start to merge.
Mm.
And this, I think, is alluding to the prophecy that you spoke
mm-hmm.
about earlier
mm.
on. And yeah, we really do experience that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of really experiencing that there's a very deep merging between all the medicine
mm.
paths that are taking place.
Yes, and as there are with all the religions,
that's what I was just
and all
say.
The other different spiritual paths, everybody's opening up to everybody else.
That's the message or the journey of
yeah,
the time,
sure.
I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the word syncretism. It's the blending of practices and ideas from different traditions, customs,
yeah.
and religions, and so on.
Yeah.
We're becoming, you know, integrated in that
yeah.
way. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so we're happy to admit that we're not performing an African ceremony here,
right.
but we're working with an African plant,
mm-hmm.
And you know, we're kind of open about that. We're not trying to imitate anything here. Yeah, we're kind of like doing. We're working with what's come to us, you know, it's like working with what works, isn't it?
Absolutely,
if it works,
yeah.
work with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not that I'm the ultimate arbiter of, you know, being able to separate truth from fiction, but my feeling is that you've both come to this point where you are now in a organic kind of a way of following,
mm.
You know, wise inner promptings and the guidance of the medicine, and you seem
yeah.
to be doing it with integrity and you know, care and responsibility.
Yeah.
So it feels pretty good to me. I think I'd be happy to come to one of your ceremonies. I hope you come back. I can't come to this one,
yeah.
but I
yeah.
hope you come back. So
yeah. Yeah, we do. We instill there's a very deep feeling of trust.
Yeah.
Amongst the people we work with.
Yeah.
Very, very deep feeling of trust. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work, gentlemen. So I've been speaking with Steve and Sean, Iboga ceremony leaders. This is the end of the third and final part of our discussion.